from Wentworth Institute of Technology in Boston. Welcome to Inside Wentworth.
Welcome, everyone, and thanks for joining us for this installment of Inside Wentworth, the podcast series created by the Institute's Communications Office to highlight the many exciting things happening on the Wentworth campus and to discuss sort of in general issues and programs that affect college students more broadly. My name is Dennis Nealon. I am the Associate Director for Public Relations and Marketing at Wentworth and your host for today's discussion. Today we're going to be talking about an issue that impacts millions of undergraduates around the country, and that is sustaining a healthy and productive college career. At this point in the academic year, about 7 or so weeks into the fall semester, we can say that students and their parents, in some respects, have crossed an important goal line. And by the way, I mention parents because they play a critical role in any student's college career, obviously. The students and their parents have survived the pressure, anxiety, and typical homesickness that come with venturing off to college by now. So they've passed, if you will, an early endurance test. So the question is for us now, how do we keep things running on an even keel? Joining us is Wentworth's Maura Mulligan, Director of the Institute's Center for Wellness and Disability Services. Maura is an expert in this field, an authority on the latest methods and guidelines that students and their parents can follow all the way through to graduation day. She's been a social worker for 23 years and has been working at Wentworth for the past 12 years. Hi, Maura.
Hi, Dennis.
Thanks for being here with us today. Appreciate you coming in.
Thanks for having me.
So what are we talking about when we look at this first early phase of the academic year, especially for freshmen or first-year students? I think that's what we're principally dealing with for this discussion. Does this new beginning represent the most challenging test for young people in their college careers?
Sure, it often does. We really consider the first 6 weeks or so of college to be sort of the most difficult transition time for incoming students. There's a lot of changes all at once. So they're coming to a new school. For many of them, they are living away from home for the first time. So not all of our students do. But those who do, it's learning to live with other people and live on campus away from family.
Sure.
For our commuter students, it's learning how to get to campus, maybe on the train or fighting traffic, and finding ways to connect on campus as well. The academic rigors of college is very different than high school. So for a lot of them, it's getting used to the classroom while also adjusting to different ways to getting to school, living on campus, also making new friendships. So for many of them, they're leaving friends that they've maybe had since kindergarten or at least for the last few years of high school and moving away. So those are a lot of transition pieces happening for people all at the same time, which can be really stressful.
So we really are right at that point where it just is, you know, you sort of get to where, okay, we've crossed that sort of hump, if you will, and now students really begin to settle in, and maybe some of the the difficulties or issues that they had to face at the beginning are subsiding a little bit. We're really right at that mark.
Right. We've sort of, for most students, we'll say by this point in the semester, people should feel pretty well adjusted. Not that people still aren't homesick at times or struggling. And then if anyone is really still struggling a lot with that, that really maybe is crossing a line of needing some additional support, which everyone does sometimes.
Sure. Now, we're talking just really half of the first semester here so far. And there's still a long way to go, you know, for students. Most students would typically go through 4 years of school in college. So what are some of the other tough periods that students should be prepared for in terms of this factor of still being away from home and making sure that they're doing well at school and even thriving? Are there other sort of periods that you're on the outlook for and that you tell people,
So we're right in the middle of midterms right now. So for a lot of our students, this is a tough week or two with people coming up on midterms. It's important for students to keep in mind that still means there's still half the semester left. So even if they're not maybe performing as well as they would like initially, there's plenty of time left. But all students, regardless of what year they are, this is sort of a pressure point kind of time in the semester when they're coming up on midterms. And then heading toward the end of the semester when projects are due and midterms exams are happening and there are different presentations happening toward the end of the year. So that's sort of the academic piece. But what's an interesting transition time for especially our first year students is actually over winter break. And transitioning back home. So it's sort of just beginning to think about, even as the semester comes to an end and that stress is gone, for many people going home can also be stressful. It's also readjusting to your family, right? And you've maybe had a lot of freedom. If you're one of our residential students and have had lots of freedom and been able to sort of keep your own schedule, to transition back for 4 or 5 weeks to a family can also be challenging.
In what ways? That raises an interesting point, because I didn't really think of that myself as when I was looking at this discussion today. I was thinking more in terms of the student physically leaving home and setting up camp at school. But you're right that there is the reverse of that, too. All of a sudden, that newfound freedom, you know, where their parents aren't telling them what to do constantly and where they're not fitting into a home schedule that's devised by their parents. Now they've got to leave school where they don't have that and go back home and face sort of a more restrictive sort of atmosphere or environment. So what kind of problems does that pose?
Sure, people often don't think about that. You know, the holidays in general are a stressful time for a lot of people. We as a society often think of it as a very happy time, but it's not that for everyone. So sometimes the pressure of holidays and families can be hard in and of itself. And then transitioning back, having families who have curfews suddenly, and if you've been living on campus and were not used to that, or maybe responsibilities at home that you're suddenly in charge of chores or helping with other things. And for some students, coming home and realizing you've missed time with the family and just sort of trying to get your footing as to where you fit in and what's happened at home, and have rooms changed or have things happened within the family that feels different, that even though you were maybe visiting occasionally or talking on the phone, it's different. And sort of really kind of figuring out their new role in that family as a occasional visitor versus being there daily can be a challenge.
Now, your work obviously is very campus based. You're not going into people's homes and everything, but you've encountered this kind of things before. Have you heard discussions from parents maybe, or from students themselves on, you know, geez, it's hard going back home. What am I supposed to, so is there something that, is there a way to prepare for that at all?
And we actually start this conversation with some of our parents during new student orientation over the summer, sort of preparing them that this will be different. This will be a challenge. And it's different if a student comes home for a weekend during the year versus, you know, 4 or 5 weeks, because it just definitely feels like you're home a little bit more. There's a little bit of a higher expectation. And we really just encourage that communication with families, to be talking about it before a student gets home, spending some time as the holidays approach to sort of say, hey, when I come home, what's going to happen? Is there going to be a curfew? What's my expectation? Will I have access to a car?
That's a good idea.
You know, those kinds of things, talking about ahead of time, what sort of freedoms you might have versus what you will not have, can be helpful for both parties to know the expectations before they get there.
That makes perfect sense, because otherwise there might be that sort of vacuum where the student comes back home and thinks, hey, I'm still at school. I stay up as late as I want. I can wander about at whatever hour I want. And so that that can create a sort of tension back on the home front.
Exactly.
The parents having to try and readjust their schedule too, to sort of keep up with someone who's with the newly found freedom that the college experience can bring.
Right, absolutely.
So that's interesting. I want to get in just a bit to, you know, specific your list of things that that we can do or students can do on campus in conjunction with your office and your staff to, you know, perpetuate or sustain that good, healthy, rewarding college experience. But first, maybe let me just back up a little bit. And can you tell us more specifically about your office and what you're doing with your staff on sort of a day-to-day basis? What sort of services are there? I know this is a lot of material to offer, but if you could give us sort of an overview, that'd be great.
Sure, and I'll focus mostly today on our sort of mental health piece. We do also provide disability accommodations and things like that, but for the nature of this, much of our day is spent in individual appointments with students, so it is free and confidential mental health counseling for students who are having a hard time. So many students come in sort of regularly. We are what we call triaging, kind of working with students who are in a bit of crisis. We might be managing a mental health emergency for a student and their family that they're going through. So we're working on sort of that mental health piece. And at the same time, we're really trying to focus on mental wellness. So about, you know, 15% of our students might use our center, but that's a lot of other students then that aren't using our center who are doing some things well, and we want to be able to keep promoting that. So we have a resiliency project we're working with the entire Division of Student Affairs called Project 40. Lots of focus on resiliency, helping students to sort of do what is working for them to sort of stay mentally healthy and take care of themselves so that they don't wind up needing counseling. doing lots of outreach to our campus around suicide prevention, making sure students know how to be good bystanders, and if they're, whether it's students, faculty, or staff, that they are aware if a student's having a hard time, to know the resources for them and to get them to our office if they need them, that we're available. We also, this year, the Institute has partnered with a service called Protocol so that after hours, students can call the Center for Wellness and talk directly to a counselor, not a Wentworth staff member, but an outside counselor in the evenings and on weekends. So if students
can
are
actually
having a
get
hard
someone
time,
right
they
on
can
the phone.
Get a live person on the phone and
that's
just
great.
Talk with them for a little bit until they're feeling better. And that's really been a nice complement to our office this year so far as well.
That's great. Now, is there a range of, I'm trying to get a sense of the types of issues that are brought to you by students.
Is
it, I imagine that it ranges from very sort of, things that you can address very quickly and more easily to more problematic instances.
Right.
Can you give an idea of what kinds of things the students come to you for?
Sure.
In general.
The two biggest issues that students come to the center for, and this is true of most college counseling centers, is anxiety and depression.
Mm-hmm.
So we have a lot of students on our campus struggling with anxiety and depression. Some of this has begun much before coming to Wentworth. Sometimes it is a new diagnosis.
Right.
Really important for students to recognize they are not alone in that at all.
You
know, 1 in 4 or 1 of 5 or 1 in 5 students, depending on the diagnosis there, really sort of struggle with depression or anxiety at some point in their lives, and wanting them to be aware that support is available for them. So those are our two biggest issues. And then we have students coming in with sort of equally important, but sometimes sort of less long-term issues, struggles with breakups. You know, that can be sort of a difficult thing for students to deal with. Sometimes there's sort of some academic decisions. We try to kind of push that back to advising, but sometimes students really want to have some conversations about whether this is sort of the right field for them and talk through sort of what it means for them in their life. So those are sort of more minor. We definitely are seeing more students for more actual mental health kinds of issues on a regular basis.
And also it must range just to, and I'm not sure you do this, but the office deals with just sicknesses, you know, illnesses and that kind of thing, right? From routine head colds and everything
like
that.
We don't actually. We have a health center that is staffed by Harvard Vanguard Medical Associates.
So this is separate from
From our office. So we work very closely with them, and we can refer students to them. They are located in the Mass Art Building, the Tree of Life Building, as it's known. And students can go there and use them as a primary care, or if they're sick, they can use them there. So we work and collaborate with them, but they're separate.
So you're dealing more with the manifestations of stress and anxiety and sort of those kind of mental issues that they might be dealing with.
Mental health, right.
Now how has that changed? It seems to me that it's much more focused these days, or much broader, or for lack of a better term, your services are much smarter now. I mean, you're providing, you know, a level of service and an understanding that might not have been that way even a couple of years ago. So you've become, and in general, this has become much more sophisticated in terms of what you're able to offer. And in the same token, I think that there's also more responsibility being put on the students themselves in terms of bystander things. Or so how has it changed in the past couple of years, even?
The last few years, it's been sort of an ongoing moving trend toward more students seeking help. But I would say sort of many years ago, more than a decade ago or so, I would say that college counseling was seen as sort of the place where people go and they're just having a tough day. It was, you know, roommate issues, and occasionally a breakup issue, nothing really that significant. And that's really changed nationwide. At least over the last decade, toward significantly impacted mental health kinds of issues. And I think some of that is great, because on some level what that means is more of our students are seeking help and they're asking for help. So it's not necessarily that these issues didn't exist in the past. It's that maybe students weren't being diagnosed early. Maybe they were afraid to bring that up or ask for it. And so now they're being able to kind of come forward and feel comfortable. And that's really the most important part, is asking for help. And it's one of sort of our top goals we're going into. But just they're really coming forward, and the world is more sophisticated around what's happening for these students, that this is actually a mental health issue, that there's good treatments and better treatments all the time.
So that's a good thing.
It's a very good thing.
There's probably, I'm guessing there's a lot less of a stigma attached to, you know, I need to go to health services. It seems to me that the younger students, the first year students these days, don't feel like there's, you know, there's something wrong with me if I need to go seek these services.
That's what we hope.
That's a good thing.
Right. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. So in general, what on average do you think is the percentage of cases that are brought to you guys that you're able to work through, you know, pretty successfully with just the resources that you have? Is it the case that where most of the instances that are brought to your attention are things that you can deal with working with the student and with the families?
Most of the time. If someone needs something that we can't provide, we work with some people in the community to do so. So we're, you know, generalists on some level. So if someone has a real significant need, say, for specific help for an eating disorder, you know, we're not the best place. Can we do some of that work? Sure. But are there better people to do that for them? Yes. Or substance abuse. We can do some of that work. But if someone is looking to, you know, detox off a particular substance, we're working with community members. So it really depends on what the student need is. We try our best to meet student needs as best we can.
Sure.
But recognize that sometimes that they will get better faster or you know, better with the input of people with more expertise.
Good. Now, what are the most common things, Maura? What are some of the most, you know, the typical things that you see on a daily or weekly basis with students coming in? Is it more just anxiety about being away from home, or
No, these are actually more anxiety and depression as mental health disorders. So they're not necessarily specific to an event, but someone may be more struggling with a disorder for a longer term for various reasons. You know, sometimes it's a trauma, sometimes it's genetics, it's hard to know, sometimes kind of what's causing that.
I see. So these are things that may be triggered or activated by the process of leaving home, or, you know, that's sort of something that launches, you know, into a past difficulty or something, a history that's already there.
Right. Or they already were working with someone while in high school and then they're transitioning to college and needing that continued support.
Well, you guys do great work. I've heard a lot of good things about the office. I know that you're your team and your work, you know, represents a leader in this field, really, among colleges and universities, which is part of the reason we wanted to have you in and talk about this, because I've heard you, you know, speak to these issues on many occasions, and it seems like you really have a determined and dedicated group of people.
We do. We're
here,
very, very fortunate.
Which is typical of the Wentworth experience,
I've
noticed, all the way from student affairs, you know, to the center, the wellness center where you work. There really are some great people here, and the students and their families should know that that you are here to help, and that you can do a lot of good there. I want to segue from that more into something that's more, you know, broadly important for people everywhere that are dealing with college students and their parents, and that is, give us your sense of what are the, you know, top five or six or 10, however many you want to give us, but the top methods or tips, if you will, for now that we're past that initial hump, you know, how do we sustain this going on? This is the advice that the Wellness Center would give.
Right, sure. So, you know, number one, I think, is ask for help. We've talked a little about that, Dennis, already now. We know that students who succeed don't usually do so alone. They often have people, you know, supporting them, family, friends, faculty members, people they can lean on, different offices on campus. It's really a sign of strength, not weakness, to ask for help when they need it. So I think regardless of whether you're a first year or a senior, sort of asking for the help in whatever area it is critical.
So don't go it alone.
Don't go it alone, right?
That's good advice.
Yep, sleep. It sounds really, really simple and silly almost to say that, but the importance of sleep is something that no student should take lightly. There's lots of scientific evidence about the importance of 7 or 8 hours of sleep a night.
I was going to say, how many?
Improving academic performance and mental wellness. Our bodies, when they're sleep deprived, we suffer from poor concentration. We tend to make poor food choices. You know, we use sugar and caffeine to kind of keep us going. And emotionally, we can really feel down and overwhelmed and anxious when we're not getting enough sleep. That really contributes. So, you know, often people feel like staying up late is useful, but we really know that it's not, and it's better for students to actually get to bed, get a good night's sleep, and wake up early refreshed and able to study is actually more beneficial. So sleep is another one of those.
Very important for immune deficiency, too, or to avoid, I should say, immune deficiency.
So, right.
Help you avoid those colds and everything that's going around in the residence halls this time of year. So that's a good one, too. Plenty of sleep. You said 7 or 8 hours?
7 to 8, yes, absolutely. Finding time to do that, getting to sleep. Mm-hmm. Developing positive coping skills is really important for our students. You know, we all go through periods of stress. We have difficult days. And knowing how to cope when that happens is really essential to staying healthy and productive. So finding positive ways to deal with stress, such as seeking help, talking to someone you trust, exercising, listening to music, those are kind of examples of the positive coping skills. Mm-hmm. And keeping that positive mindset, even when you're having a bad day, rather than dwelling on the negative, can help lead you to like real solution-focused, problem-solving mm-hmm. kind of thinking versus mm-hmm. getting stuck in those negative mindsets and not being able to get out of it.
Now, how do you go about, and that's also excellent advice, how does one go about really actually doing this? If you're in the heat of the moment, so
right.
to speak, you're busy with your schoolwork, mm-hmm. maybe you're not getting enough sleep, and you're feeling right. a little anxious, a little stressed.
Right.
Is there a way that you tell people to actually physically sit and think about other things that they could be doing
right.
specifically to offset that kind of
sure.
pressure?
One of the most important tools of that is really like mindfulness, right? So you have to be
sure.
able to step outside of that a little bit to get that perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And so, our big thing for our Project 40 is taking a pause. And
mm-hmm.
that's sort of a piece of that is having students sort of take a few, even if it's 5 deep breaths, calm yourself down.
Yeah.
Kind of write down for yourself what really has to happen. So
mm-hmm.
often we get overwhelmed with worry and anxiety about what has to happen. But when we break it down into small steps, we realize, well, I'm worried about these 5 things, but really only one of them has to happen today. And so having people sort of try to put on the back burner things that aren't
mm-hmm.
immediate and focus on what are the few things that I have to do today to sort of reduce my stress level. And I can focus on those other things later and not sort of letting all of that kind of pile on.
So in other words, there's no reason to have it all going through your mind at once or,
right.
or coming at you
to,
at
right.
once, right?
Exactly.
Because they're not all interrelated, these
right.
things, right? And
right.
to look at them maybe one at a time and try and
right.
put them in some kind of order.
Mm-hmm.
That makes perfect sense.
Right.
So what are some others?
Sure, a couple others. I know
mm-hmm.
we're kind of probably getting low on time. Exercise. So the science behind the benefit of regular exercise is significant.
Mm-hmm.
And for many students, it sometimes feels like they're too busy to find time to exercise. And
right.
that's for everyone, not just students.
Mm-hmm.
But the positive impact on our mind as well as our body makes finding time for exercise really important. It improves mood, reduces depression and anxiety, helps concentration. These are all important parts of being a healthy student.
Right.
And so when time is limited, we encourage students to get creative. Go for a walk with people you're in a group with and do your brainstorming as you walk and then
mm-hmm.
come back and sit down and do the project.
Mm-hmm.
If you have to be in touch with family members instead of texting them, maybe put on some headphones and take a walk while you're making those callbacks.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Trying to do some things like that so you're incorporating exercise into your day, making plans with friends to meet them to exercise. It's two things. You sort of get that social connection and then you also exercise. It's
right.
a good motivator too. So
mm-hmm.
really finding a way to make that a priority, even when you're feeling stressed, if you can make some time for exercise, it's really significantly improving your mental health
mm-hmm.
to be able to do that.
Mm-hmm. So something as simple as maybe a 15 or 30 minute
absolutely.
Stroll around campus.
Exactly. During
as
lunch
long,
hours.
As long as you're out and moving around.
Or faculty.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. That makes right. perfect sense too.
Right.
And it's hard to imagine, but many of us face this is, I can't even find 15 minutes to go for a walk
right.
sometimes. So.
And we feel like we can't, but when we look at if it's important, and that's where it's sort of having people understand that it makes me feel good, so I have to make it a priority. And does
yeah.
that mean I... get off social media for a few minutes and
right.
do that instead, or step away, or right, being creative about, I can take this call while I go for a walk. I don't have to be sitting at my desk to
uh-huh.
make this call. Those
so
kinds of things.
So big part of it is just doing it.
Just doing it.
Just
right.
walk outside and you'll find yourself walking and 15 minutes will go by and you won't even miss the time. Right.
Right. And you'll feel better.
That's
right.
also very good advice.
Right.
So
another couple of things, just really setting some what we call SMART goals for yourself. So
mm-hmm.
SMART goals, and people who are not aware are specific, right? They're measurable, they're easily attainable, they're relevant, and they're timely. So having a large goal, like I want to graduate from Wentworth with a 4.0. Okay, well, your first year student, that's 4 or 5 years off. that's really hard to know if that's attainable. We don't really know. And so really setting these small goals for yourself. And if you want to be successful at anything, whether it's at work, whether it's fitness, you need goals that you can work toward that are really realistic. And so really focusing on them, being more time limited and breaking them into smaller chunks can be really motivating. So when you're having a hard day, if you have a goal that you're trying to meet, what is it that's going to get you to get to that 8 a.m. class when you're tired? What is it that's going to have you stay in and get your work done versus go socialize maybe tonight with friends that you wish to do, but you know you have a different goal in mind? So whether that's, you know, obtaining a certain co-op, getting a certain grade in a particular class, you're running a 5K, whatever it might be, you know, kind of using those thoughts in terms of setting goals that are really attainable and timely that you can measure pretty easily, can really help motivate you.
So it could be something simple as, instead of looking at the large, large picture, like you're saying, I want to get a 4.0. You could say, I really want to do well on this particular assignment or this particular course, or tonight, I really want to do well in this homework so that I'm prepared for tomorrow. Something is just scaling back those goals to make them more attainable is what you're saying.
And then you can measure the progress of those things as well. And then finally, I would say really connecting. Most of us use social connections and we need them. And not having them can really negatively impact our well-being. So whether you're a first-year student trying to find a new peer group as you come to college, or whether you're an ongoing student who maybe has had trouble finding some way to connect, because that social connection really can reduce isolation, can have people really feel like they have people to talk to if they're having a hard time. It can improve our moods, you know, to be able to spend a few minutes connecting with people. So, you know, joining a club, whether it's on campus, whether it's within the COF, whether it's something in your community, becoming involved in your temple, your mosque, your church, if spirituality is important to you, you know, even attending a study group, rather than studying alone, you get out of your room, you find other people to connect with about a topic, even if you're a little, you know, not so sure about a social interaction, just having that ability to sort of connect with people on a specific topic reduces isolation, which is really important. And so building relationships with others will also make, you know, your college experience more enjoyable. It will expose you to different kinds of peoples, different ideas and cultures, which is one of the things that we're hoping students gain from higher education. It's not just about your academics, but it's really sort of growing as a person. So finding time for that connection and making it a priority.
And like you say, that's really important versus staying in your room and just being on Facebook or Twitter or something.
Or studying, you know.
Or studying all the time.
Academics, we often say to students, we don't, you know, I'd rather you get an A minus versus an A if it means you get out of your room and you exercise and you make time for friends and you are enjoying your time here and not becoming anxious with all the work. That's a little bit more important sometimes than maybe just the academic piece.
Now, let's look at it from the other side, if we can, just on the, and this is great advice, these six steps that you've outlined here, I think are very valuable for students really everywhere to keep in mind. Let's look at it from the opposite side, and that is parental involvement. You know, what is the function of the parents in all of these things, and how do you know, parents sort of keep tabs without being, you know, too dominant, you know, and too intrusive in what's going on at the for the student at, on campus. I'm interested in you know, what kind of advice you might give to parents, maybe perhaps using these same goals and tips. You know, what level of involvement should they have?
And that's a great question. And we know this generation of students are more connected to their parents maybe than, you know, any generation before. And they really rely on their parents' guidance, which is important than to look at that as a partnership. And so, you know, it's not about parents leaving their students at college or sending them off and sort of, you know, kind of wiping their hands. We know our students are talking to their parents a lot. And I think the role parents can have is sort of thinking about these goals and finding ways to get students to take some action and do these things on their own, because you know, they've raised their children, but they're still involved in their lives. And how do we have them see that role as helping to continue to foster independence and good self-care, and having them begin to do some of that problem solving and goal setting on their own? You know, so it's, you know, it's an example might be if a student is struggling in a class, something we would want to maybe suggest parents try not to do is be to reach out to a faculty member for their student, right?
That wouldn't be good.
Right, that might not be good, but a student might quite not be sure how to begin to interact with a professor. So what a parent might do that would be equally helpful but would teach the student a little bit more about doing on their own would be to maybe role play with them. Like if you're going to talk to the professor, what might you say, and have them talk through with their student how they can do that. Or if the student wants to write an email and say to the parent, can I read you what I wrote? Does it sound like I'm making sense? Does it sound like I'm getting my point across? Sure. Is it respectful? Whatever it might be. So parents sort of taking on that role as sort of an advisor on some level, and sort of instead of doing it for them, but really working with their student, providing them support, encouraging mm-hmm. them to ask for help rather than asking for the help mm-hmm. for them. Mm-hmm. I mean, obviously, if they're worried about someone's safety, we want parents to be involved at that level. But this is for the more general day-to-day things, mm-hmm. Really using their role as parents and knowing that their students trust them and their opinion to really help foster that independence mm-hmm. and teaching students to self-advocate for themselves.
So there's plenty of room there for sort of a soft influence where the parent could say, hey, have you found any clubs or, you know, do you know about any sports or anything? Or
exactly. You know, following up with them, encouraging mm-hmm. them to join things, asking them about friends, asking them, you know, how those friendships are going, mm-hmm. Encouraging them to go to study groups, those kinds of things mm-hmm. can mm-hmm. be really helpful. Mm-hmm.
And what about advice that your office gives, Maura, for sort of, you know, maybe avoiding some of the pitfalls, the typical pitfalls of college life, if you will, in terms of partying? And, you know, what sort of parameters do you offer there? And, you know, what sort of advice might, you know, parents be able to piggyback off on in regard to, you know, sort of the other things that students will do, mm-hmm. you know, that might present issues and right. and problems for them at school that they'd like to avoid.
Right. I think for you know, families and, you know, our student affairs people talk to parents a lot at orientation and throughout the year about students and expectations, and we have a code of conduct.
Right.
So I think as we, you know, partnering with parents to say to students, even though things might be different in our home, this is the code of conduct at Wentworth, you know, mm-hmm. or these are the laws mm-hmm. Of the state or whatever it might be, and really encouraging them to socialize and have fun, because we want students to do that. That's an important piece of college, is for them to get out, whether they're commuter students and they come back to campus on weekends to participate in activities, or whether they're residential students, we want them to leave their rooms. So encouraging them to be sort of safe mm-hmm. In their socializing and to be respectful of what the policies and laws are, that no mm-hmm. one is sort of telling them they shouldn't be having fun, but we want them to sort of be abiding by laws and making sure that they're safe when they're interacting, you know, either on campus or off campus, and being respectful.
That's great advice. So it really behooves the parents to make that understood for the students too, that you're going to a new place,
right.
you're going to be living there, but you also need to be aware of the, you know, parameters that you're supposed to, you know,
right.
to
right.
act within. Right. And that's also very,
not,
very
right.
good
you don't
advice.
Want your semester derailed or your career derailed by, you know, sort of breaking some laws and getting into trouble with those things.
And maybe not even realizing it, right?
Right.
You know,
it's like and to recognize that mistakes will happen and students will make mistakes, because everyone does. Mm-hmm. And as a parent, I think being able to talk with them about that mistake and really making it a learning experience. And mm-hmm. I know that, you know, that's what Wentworth wants as well for our students, is to sort of learn from the mistakes they make. We don't expect perfection and being
part of the process too, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. And it kind of uh-huh. grow and move forward and in a better direction.
Mm-hmm. Well, great. Give us a little information, if you can, more about students who just to make sure that they know the resources are available, how they might contact your office
sure.
on campus.
Sure. So for the Center for Wellness mm-hmm. Disability Services, we're located on the ground floor of Watson Hall. They can go on our website to look at information. You can call us, 617-989-4390. That number is active, again, 24/7, so you can either call during the day and speak to a staff member to set up some appointments if you need to, or if you want to just talk to someone after hours, you're having mm-hmm. a hard time on a, you know, Saturday afternoon or a Sunday evening, you can also call that number and talk to a counselor as well. We just want students to know that they absolutely should do that. We're a resource for them at all times. And if you're not struggling with a mental health issue, but you're looking to sort of get more information on sort of any sort of, you know, mental health or health topic, we have a coordinator of wellness education who does lots of
great.
Programming as well, and students can use that as well to continue to stay mentally healthy.
So there's almost always someone there, if almost any time of day you
right.
can find somebody if you're having whatever difficulty it is.
Absolutely.
And that the overriding message there seems to be, you don't need to sit and wallow in your whatever is bothering you, that there is someone there you can talk
to. Reach out and ask for help, absolutely.
That's important to know. Well, thanks very much for joining us here today. I think this is great advice, great information, and it's Maura Mulligan. And for Inside Wentworth, we'll be saying so long for now and talk to you next time.
Thanks for listening to Inside Wentworth. To learn more about Wentworth and read our latest news and feature stories, visit us online at www.wit.edu.